Dear friends, the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is truly universal. And we say so because we find that even after the passing of well over 1,000 years, which is truly a long time, we find that despite the passing of well over 1,000 years, the statements and the behaviors and the manners and the decisions and the characteristics and qualities and persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam are still very much applicable to this present day and age. Now, this can only come about if an individual is connected to the creator of time, the creator of space, and truly the source of knowledge and wisdom, that is the Almighty Allah. In this holy month of Ramadan, we can benefit so much from the beautiful statements of Imam Ali alayhi salam. One such statement which we find from Imam Ali alayhi salam is where His Eminence says, "Ease and peace of mind will never come to a person who is jealous." In today's day and age where everybody is looking for just a little bit of ease and peace of mind, this statement from Imam Ali seems like a golden prescription given to us by a doctor, a physician who is connected to the divine. Are we not all looking for peace of mind, even if it is just a little bit? Imam Ali alayhi salam says to us that if you are a person who has the quality of being jealous, then ease and peace of mind will never come to you. It is such a beautiful statement. It is such a simple statement, but when you go into the depths of this statement from Imam Ali and this universal persona, we find that the spiritual aspects of it can be clearly seen. If, God forbid, we suffer from this negative quality of being jealous, or perhaps if we have seen other people who are jealous, you will notice that a person who is jealous has this kind of incessant greed within them. First off, they're never satisfied with what they have because they want what others have. Two, they're constantly looking at what others have, and thus they overlook what they themselves have. These two things, among the many other repercussions and consequences of being jealous, these two things alone destroy the peace of mind and tranquility of an individual. And so, dear friends, if we want to have that peace of mind, if we want to have tranquility and serenity in our lives, if we want to have ease as far as our mind and our soul and even our body goes, then we must give up this negative and bad quality, this negative habit of being jealous. And so, when we are not a jealous person, we will achieve, to some extent, that peace of mind that we are all searching for. A beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, remember not to overload yourself. Do not entrust yourself with so many obligations and duties that you cannot honorably fulfill them, or with such luxurious life as to be wicked and vicious. Because if this load is more than what you can conveniently bear, then your journey will be very painful and tiresome to you. If you find around you such poor, needy, and destitute people who are willing to carry your load for you as far as the Day of Judgment, then consider this to be a boon. Engage them and pass your burden onto them. Distribute your wealth among the poor, destitute, and the needy. Help others to the best of your ability, and be kind and sympathetic to human beings. Thus, relieve yourself from the heavy responsibility and liability of submitting an account on the Day of Judgment of how you have made use of His bounties.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
And so when we talk about this issue of Hadith Saqalain, where the Prophet says, I am leaving two things behind, the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, you cannot separate one from the other. Ali was with the Quran and Quran is with Ali. Just one more example about it. When Surah Bara'at was revealed, the ninth surah of the Quran, one of the last ones to be revealed. The earlier ayat which came, not the whole surah was revealed together in peace form, but the earlier ayat which came, which was the ultimate and given to the mushrikeen of Makkah after the conquest of Makkah, where they were given 4 months grace time to think about Islam. Islam will not be forced on them. And if they agree, that's fine. Otherwise, after 4 months, they have to vacate Makkah because Makkah is now a sanctuary for Muslims. So all this Taliban and ISIS who think you spread Islam by sword only, this is against the Sunnah of Rasulullah. He's giving 4 months grace period for them to think about it, study about it, question about it. And so when those ayat came as a declaration against the mushrikeen in Makkah, Rasulullah decided, according to the norm those days, to choose an elderly companion of Rasulullah and asked him to take that to Mecca, and this was Abu Bakr. Take this and declare this to the mushrikeen of Mecca. While he left Medina, traveling towards Mecca, Jibreel comes down. And this is in our books as well as Sunni books. Jibreel comes down. And he says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving you the message that the bara'at that you have to declare to the mushrikeen, either you do it yourself or rajulun minka. Either go and announce that only yourself or somebody who is from you. Min niyyat. Remember, even in this khutbah we recited yesterday, where the Prophet says, Anta ka nafsi, you are like my soul. You are from me, I am from you. This is one occasion. He calls then Ali. And interesting, Jibreel didn't say who. The message was only, you go yourself or send somebody minka, who is from you. And Ali called Ali, Rasulullah called Ali. He says, go with a fast horse until you reach Abu Bakr. Take the ayat from him and go and declare that in Mecca. Of course, Abu Bakr would be kind of disappointed. He came back. He says, Rasulullah, what happened? Did Allah say something wrong about me? And Rasulullah said, no, nothing. Nothing personal. The command was, either I go myself, or rajulun minka, or somebody from you. And when I looked around, there is nobody closer to me other than Ali bin Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wasalam.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
News, scientific news, artistic news, with delight.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then, the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased, and at Ansan Park in Central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID, and we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on its Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
A new selfie museum in Sweden is flipping the script by making visitors both the artist and the exhibit. The establishment is dubbed the Museum and is in a shopping mall in Stockholm. Unlike other selfie museums, this one has no works of art on its walls. Instead, its brightly decorated rooms are meant to serve as fun backgrounds for visitors to take their selfies or shoot videos in. Other rooms let the visitors bury themselves in candy-colored foam bricks, strike a pose under neon lights, or sit on a huge colorful swing. The manager says the museum is interactive and lets the visitors be the artists themselves in order to create the art they want to see. The Drone Show Korea 2022 has been held at the Busan Exhibition and Convention Center, BEXCO. It featured 137 companies and 533 booths, making this year's incarnation the largest in the show's six-year history. The event also featured the participation of a large international industry representatives from Japan and Western Europe. A highlight of this year's event was military technology centered around the unveiling of new indigenous UAVs. This year's show marked a long-endurance liquid hydrogen drone produced by a South Korean company. These developments reflect South Korea's attempt to improve resilience and revolutionize its approach to warfare. The event puts on display the importance of drone industry in various spheres, including defense purposes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
More than 163 wildlife species have been released back into lagoons and forests in Colombia's Casanare province after being seized and rehabilitated by authorities fighting wildlife trafficking. These include 15 different species such as anteaters, turtles, macaws, a toucan, and a leopard. They were nurtured back to health by fauna vets from an environmental authority in charge of managing sustainable development. The authority, Corporinoquia, released more than 1,200 animals back into the wild in 2021 alone. Colombia is one of the world's most biodiverse countries by square kilometer and is home to some 10% of the world's flora and fauna.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching, along with other threats, has brought the species to the brink of extinction.
With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INEC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was, how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play? And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never played badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and the snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat.
Yeah, the animals are settling in well. We've tried to recreate the wild habitat in the Himalayan hills. Both species live quite high up, in case of the snow leopards, up to 5,000 meters on these very steep rocky slopes, which you can see here in the habitat as well. We've tried to use the topology of Dublin Zoo.
The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss. Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyah.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim philosophers, thinkers, jurists, and scholars all across the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers for today's discussion, Shaykh Mahdavi and Shaykh Ziyaniya. Shaykh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So very recently we missed one of the most outstanding Shiite marja, we can say a religious authority, Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gurgani, we can say, who was a teacher of advanced courses of jurisprudence and principles of jurisprudence in the city of Qom. May Allah bless his soul and may he rest in peace, inshallah. He's buried in the holy shrine very close to the chamber in which Lady Masuma is buried, and most of the great outstanding Maharaja and Ulama are buried in that courtyard of Holy Shrine of Hazrat al-Masuma. That's why we decided to dedicate today's episode of the program The Teacher to this important personality and marja, Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gurgani. Sheikh Ziyani, Allah says to you, brother, what information do we have about the early life of this great marja?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gurgani was born in 1318, according to Hijri solar calendar, in the city of Najaf. Of course, as his name is showing, he was not originally from Najaf. He was originally from the city of Gurgan, a city that is located in the north of Iran. Because his father was a scholar and a clergyman, he moved to Najaf to study there and to complete his studying, Islamic studies. And there, Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gurgani was born.
That's right.
He moved back to Gurgan after some years, and when he was 7 years old, he moved back to Iran with his father. And because his father was a scholar, the father taught him the elementary studies and courses like Arabic semantic and Arabic grammar.
That's right.
And when he was 16, I mean Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani, when he was 16, he moved to have a pilgrimage over the shrines of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salatu wasalam, and Samarra, Imam al-Hasan, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, and also Qadhimain. And from that place, he moved to Mecca to perform Hajj.
That's right.
And when he came back, in his way back home, he decided to stay in Najaf to study there. But according to the suggestion and advice that Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Tabatabai Hakim, Rahmatullah Alayh, gave him, late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gurgani decided to come back to Qom and started his studies in Qom. And he studied the teachings that, the courses that normal students, they took it for 10 years or at least 8 years. He completed these courses in 4 years.
Okay.
And after that, he participated in the higher level or highest level of Islamic studies, that is Dars-e Kharij.
That's right. So his most advanced studies of religious studies took place in the city of Qom.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. Okay, Sheikh Mahtavi, what about his teachers, the most outstanding teachers of Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani in the house of Qom?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Regarding his teachers and master from which he benefited, we can count the name of the outstanding ulama. For example, late Ayatollah Sayyid Hussein Burujerdi, the great marja of Shia before Imam Khomeini and before the revolution of Islamic Republic of Iran. And it is narrated that he was the youngest student among the circle of the students of late Ayatollah Sayyid Hussein Burujerdi because of his age. Because as my brother mentioned, he was born in 1318. And late Ayatollah Burujerdi, he passed away in 1340.
That's
so
right.
By the time he was benefiting from the knowledge of Sayyid Burujerdi, he was almost 22.
Right.
So he was regarded as the youngest student. And this is because of his talent, as my brother mentioned, in order to benefit from the high levels of lessons in Hawza, which is called the Dars-e Kharij or advanced lesson,
that's
you
right.
must at least take 10 years. So when he was 22, it means that he was participating in that.
Why is it called Dars-e Kharij? What does it mean by Kharij here?
In such lessons, the teacher or the actually scholar is not focusing on one textbook
mm-hmm.
and teaching from that textbook.
Okay.
They will take one textbook, but besides explanation of the matters based on that textbook, they try to have their understanding upon that issue. For example, regarding the issue of Salat, they will give or concentrate on one textbook,
mm-hmm.
let's say the book of Ayatollah Hakim, and Through the explanation, they will count the issues or fatwas of other maraji and what is the reason for which they have issued their verdicts like that. And at the end, they will conclude with their understanding and their fatwa, meaning that they are not going to be confined to one thing. So as if, yes.
The reasoning and the deduction, which is out of the main textbook.
Yes.
Okay, that's why it is called kharej.
Yes, okay, it is, requires a lot of understanding and yes, a kind of comprehensive understanding over the topic. Okay. So besides his teacher, we can count the name of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, and also late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Reza Gulpayegani, who is also one of the outstanding maraji, and also Ayatollah Araki.
That's right.
So all of them, they have passed away. May Allah bless them.
Inshallah.
So he was such a personality among the maraji that recently he passed away, as you mentioned, within a month at the beginning of the month of Sha'ban. He passed
Sha'ban
away.
Sha'ban 12th, that's right.
Yes, he passed away.
Okay, that's all right. Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani was famous for his public services. And the lifestyle of Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani very much recalls the people about the old-fashioned maraji that they had, they witnessed in Najaf, in Qom, in Mashhad. The housing, the facilities at the house, simple lifestyle that he had, it was very much like the old maraji one. Give us some details regarding this aspect of the life of Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani.
Alhamdulillah, I had this chance to have a visit to this marja for several times. And one of the most important points that we should mention about his behavior and his, you know, manner to deal with people was the smile that was always on his face. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever you were talking to him or you wanted to say salam to him, Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani was giving you a beautiful smile. And let me give you a story that is very important regarding this smile. Mm-hmm. And that is when Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani was about 40 years, less or more, before the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Because he was really trying to broadcast the voice of Islam to people and to, you know, give this, you know, teachings to people. And he was dedicating his time to do tabligh and, you know, preaching Islam. He was traveling every week from Qom to Tehran to have a minbar in Tehran. Mm-hmm. And according to his behavior, he had this smile on his lips and giving salam to people, that the shopkeepers and the people that were on his way. And after some weeks, an old man came to him and told him that I want to convert into Islam. I'm a Jew. And I want to convert into Islam. And I want to have this process done by your, you know, presence.
Okay.
And Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani asked him why. He said, because I'm attracted by your behavior and your beautiful smile, that you didn't know me. But every time that you were passing my shop, you were giving me salam and, you know, were greeting me openly and friendly. And, you know, I'm really attracted by this behavior. And that old man had no children. So he converted into Islam from Judaism. And after that, he endowed all his properties, spent as a charity. Mm-hmm. And he put Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani as the supervisor of this endowment.
Very good.
And Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani established a very, you know, big organization by this, you know, properties and, you know, expanded his activities,
Alhamdulillah.
And, you know, this simple behavior that is the behavior of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is the behavior that attracts people. And yes. I myself, when I went into one of the times that I visited this scholar, when I entered into the office, I saw him without any, you know, bureaucratic, you know, issues. He was sitting on the ground.
A bodyguard or the
guards?
Yeah,
no one was, you know, around him, special people. There were no one was around him. Some ordinary clergymen were sitting around the room.
Okay.
And I entered and I asked him that I want to wear this uniform. I mean the turban and the
clerical turban.
Yes, cleric turban and cleric uniform.
Okay.
And he openly accepted friendly smile. So he said, you may come tomorrow. That was the 15th day of Sha'ban.
Okay.
And alhamdulillah, by his hand, I had this tawfiq to wear the clerical.
This is a custom and this is a ritual that the newly, we can say, tullab who want to wear this turban, this clerical turban, has to go to a marja or to an scholar, to an alim in order, and by their hands, okay, the turban is put on the head. And there is a ceremony which is done every year in the houses and the Islamic seminaries. The sunnah, the tradition which is passed generation after generation. Okay, that's all right. Sheikh Mahtawi, what about his other activities? I mean, the scholar activities and socio-cultural activities.
That is a good question. And we have to take into consideration, besides being a marja, besides authoring knowledgeable books like Al-Manadhir al-Nadhira fi Ahkam al-Itrat al-Tahira, and also the book which was written on the rituals of the Hajj, and the other books which were translated also into Urdu language besides being published in Farsi. He had a kind of social services activity for the ordinary people, and he was known of being committed to participating in the Husayniya, in which they are holding the program for, or in memory of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And he was really supporting all these constructions like Husayniya and Masajid, wherever they would inform him that they're in need of some money in order to complete the construction or do or establish such a thing in some areas in which they don't have their own Husayniya, he would found it. And I would like to also add top of what my brother mentioned regarding his behavior, having this down-to-earth behavior. Sometimes when you go to the house of other marja, because of the people who are around the house of the marja or the bait of marja, because of the formalities you observe there, you will find it difficult to meet the marja. But it was kind of known to everybody that it is really easy to meet Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani because of his behavior and his humbleness. I remember once we had a group of the children. It was a group of the children from the school, and they wanted to make them familiar with this hierarchy in our Shia ulama.
You mean kids' school or?
Yes, kids.
Okay,
yes,
kids. Okay, very good.
So it is a kind of noble experience for them to sit at the presence of a great marja.
Marja, very good.
But unfortunately, we couldn't succeed except Ayatollah Alavi Gurgani.
Oh.
Yes, so it shows that they didn't curl.
So he welcomed them warmly, and the kids went into the house of the marja.
Yes, and barely you may find it. Oh. I mean, people around the marja, barely they may let kids to come at the presence of the marja in a group. They might be some visiting and meeting and individual, but in a group, because kids may make noise and may not respect the presence of the marja. But he didn't care about this. Oh. Okay, welcomed us warmly, and it was a noble experience for
those kids. And the kids really enjoyed it?
Definitely.
Okay, the kids really
enjoyed it. That was a noble and spiritual experience for them. Maybe such experiences could be taken as a milestone. That happened for me, myself.
Yes.
I met Ayatollah Wahid, and in that meeting, he was talking about the Imam Zaman, and the way he addressed us, it was really touching for me. Yet, I can remember what happened in that position. But I just wanted to mention this behavior, being down to earth, beside being outstanding marja. From 1412, according to lunar calendar, almost 25 years, he has officially producing his Tawzih al-Masail.
Yes.
So he was regarded as a great marja among the other maraja. Yet he was really popular, treating people warmly, as my brother also mentioned. May Allah bless him.
May Allah bless his soul. And see how much the kids and the young generation will go to the house of a marja and visit him, how they are influenced by this kind of behavior. Maybe on the same spot, they are very much interested in Hausa studies, you know,
yeah.
And they want to attend the Hausa schools. And really, such behaviors are really, really attractive and really great for a marja. May Allah bless his soul, Sayyid Muhammad Ali Alavi Gorgani, who passed away this year, I mean, in this lunar calendar, Sha'ban 12, and he passed away and he was buried in the holy shrine of Hazrat al-Masuma in the city of Qom. Thank you, Masheikh Ziyaniya.
You're most welcome.
And Sheikh Mahdavi for your presence in the program, The Teacher. It was very kind of you. And thank you, much, dear listeners, for listening to us, for downloading for free our other episodes of the program, The Teacher. Visit our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page, also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of
prayer. إِنَّمَا سُمِّيَ رَمَضَان لِأَنَّهُ يَرْمَضُ الذُّنُوبِ.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maah Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain. but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed. A beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months, this month in which we can return towards Allah, this month in which we can reconnect with Allah, this month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter, this, the holy month of Ramadan.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إذا استهل رمضان غلقت أبواب النار وفتحت أبواب الجنان وصفدت الشياطين.
Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم stated, as soon as the month of Ramadan sets in, the gates of hell are locked up, the gates of paradise are opened, and the devils are bound up.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio, and we were talking about the holy month of Ramadan. We find, dear friends, in the holy month of Ramadan, this blessed month, this divine month, this month which is full of opportunities, this month in which the Holy Quran was revealed and was sent down, this holy month in which all of the divine books were sent down, according, of course, to a tradition from the Holy Prophet. This month in which we can truly improve our lives, turn over a new leaf, make a permanent, positive spiritual change in our lives. This very beautiful and honorable holy month of Ramadan. Now, of course, we know about the fact that we should not eat or drink while we are fasting in the holy month of Ramadan. This in itself is difficult because we have to be able to control our body, control our desires, control our instincts. It is interesting that the holy month of Ramadan teaches us that truly the mind and the soul is stronger and more powerful than the physical material body. Now, along with this idea that we should fast from, you know, eating and drinking in the holy month of Ramadan, we also talked about in one of our programs that there are various characteristics that we must avoid, such as lying and sinning and backbiting and oppression and abusing people. And likewise, there are certain characteristics that we need to inculcate and we really need to work on in this holy month of Ramadan, such as paying special attention to prayers and patience and truthfulness and a kind of strong silence. And of course, the constant remembrance of the Almighty Allah. But we find, dear friends, in other narrations from the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, and the Ahlul Bayt and the divinely appointed Imams, that they say in the narrations, anyone who does not obey the divine guide in relation to personal and family matters behaves badly and without mercy with their spouse. So again, just to, because this is a list of a few things, the first thing here is that anyone who doesn't obey Allah the Almighty when it comes to their personal and family matters, the fasting of this kind of a person is not accepted. And then they say that another thing which results in the fasting of a person not being accepted is when one behaves badly and unjustly and without mercy towards their spouse. And in order to have our fasting be accepted, we must pay attention to our family matters and to our family relations in this holy month of Ramadan in order to be successful by the will and might of Allah, inshallah. This is Dialogue, the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith. And all physically fit and mature Muslims are required to fast every day of this month of Ramadan. Fasting is not unique to Islam. It is there in Christianity, in Judaism, even in Hindu and Buddhist tradition. There is this tradition of fasting. However, in Islam, when we talk about fasting, it is more involved in a sense that every day of the month of Ramadan, we have to abstain from dawn to dusk, abstaining from food, even from drinking water. And those who are smokers are not allowed to smoke. At the end of the holy month of Ramadan, we celebrate a very important occasion, which is known as Eid al-Fitr. And this is comparable to Christmas among Christians, for example. And that day is a very major day for us, where all Muslims would gather in their mosques for a special prayer. But in our religious teachings, there is a requirement that before we even go and participate in that special prayers on Eid al-Fitr, the heads of family are required to pay a special charity on that day on behalf of themselves and their family members. That process known as, you know, paying that charity on the day of Eid is just like, you know, after going through the process of fasting for the whole month, it's as if God is now holding our hand, helping us to walk on the path of charity and sharing with others. Then maybe now that you have fasted for this long, you know the feeling of the poor and the needy people. And so this is what you have to start. Hopefully, you will continue the tradition of charity. And so when we look at this tradition, you know, it has personal benefits for us on physical level, on spiritual level, but also it's a community issue. This whole sense of gathering, you know, thanks God, all families could have been sitting in their own homes and having their own iftar without any problem. But this whole spirit of community building, where in the month of Ramadan, Muslims gather in the mosques so that they can be part of the community when they break their fast, known as iftar. And, you know, very soon after the prayers, you'll be able to witness and be part of that very beautiful tradition that we have in the Muslim society.
Hello.
حبيب التائبين يا شهر الصائمين.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.